This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
This hour will belong to Eric Macklin, because every Monday about this time, EMAC joins us, gives us a little accounting and a breakdown of the weekend that was. Eric, good morning. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good to be with you this morning. Another crazy weekend of football, as always. Just keeps delivering, man, each and every week.
Never disappoints, does it? College football has a unique way of every time you think it's going to be maybe a sleepy weekend or a slate of games aren't great, there's always
right.
some kind of story that you go, you've got to be kidding me. Which included the ACC, because, Eric, I don't believe anybody in their right mind would have thought 62-26 would be the neighborhood of the final score coming out of Miami over the weekend.
No, no shot. And I knew some people, you know, have been saying, you know, Miami's overrated and don't believe the numbers and things like that. And we were trying to defend it. But, man, North Carolina came out trying to make a statement, and they did just that. It was just overly impressive to see those guys, the way that they were just running the ball at will. It was funny enough, EJ and I were going back and forth just talking, saying, man, we really want to see, you know, Sam Howell open up that passing game, get these guys going through the air. And he didn't need to. I mean, they, of course, had a couple of really big plays. But just every time those guys ran it, whether it was inside zone, counter, outside zone, they weren't even getting sniffed for 12, 13 yards. Those guys were running wide open. What was just, you know, confusing, just to talk about Miami quickly. I know there's not too much to talk about. But you would have thought that with all that was on the line, that front seven, especially the leaders that they have up there, at linebacker, at defensive end, nose tackle, that those guys would have stepped up and really been locked into play. You're wearing your all-black uniforms. You're in front of your home crowd. You're playing for an Orange Bowl berth, potentially. And those guys were sleepwalking. And it was really interesting to see the lack of effort from that front seven from Miami, where linebackers just completely running the wrong way, defensive line getting no push at all. It was interesting to see, but man, North Carolina took full advantage of it and had a record-shattering day. Maybe a record that people will never even think about touching ever again. Those two running backs, it was amazing.
All right, let's get the hype train out here, because I want to see Michael.
There was a
Carter
lot of hype train.
Javonte Williams at the. There are a lot of hype train on this. I mean, Michael Carter and Javonte Williams, Eric. Why can't they be first team All ACC running backs together? Why not? What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I think there's a serious argument for that. It's going to be really interesting to see just how everybody votes. And, you know, knowing people watch different things and look for different things and see all that. But I truly think it's going to be Javonte Williams and Khalil Herbert from Virginia Tech. I think just the fact that Khalil is the leading all-purpose yard back, a guy that can really do it all for you and leads the country in that category, is going to push him over the top, but that shouldn't take away anything from that backfield. I mean, the best duo in America, the 1-2 punch, and really, to me, Wes, the most interesting thing, the coolest thing about their entire deal there is just their relationship. I mean, they're each other's best friend, they're each other's biggest fan. And just there's no selfishness. There's no, he's getting more touches than I am this week. They both just go out there, and when given their opportunity, they take full advantage of it. And it just so happened that was touching it 55-plus times between the two of them against Miami. And man, those guys, they're just tremendous athletes, and it's been really fun to watch them for the past 2 years.
Eric, when a game like this happens, and it's happened to everybody, I don't care who you are, you've had one of those days where, you know what, it's just not our day. But you mentioned the lack of effort, and it just kind of steamrolls, and the next thing you know, it's an avalanche. At the end of the day, what do you make of Miami? I mean, because it did change the narrative of their season, the way that went down on Saturday, which was such an important game for both sides.
You know, I do think, Pack, it's going to set them back a little bit. And it was interesting to hear, you know, Herbie on the broadcast talking about that this eliminates everything that they've done all season. I don't know if I'll go that far just quite yet, but it certainly brings back old memories. It certainly brings back old feelings of okay, this is a Miami team that's going to be so overhyped. This is going to be a Miami team that's so overrated. And then by the time they play a real team, a ranked team, you know, they get boat race. So you see this year the outcome. They play, you know, the upper echelon of the ACC this year, two of the three in Clemson and North Carolina, and lose convincingly both times. I think that, you know, Miami obviously has to keep going and get over that point, not let this loss really define, or those two losses define, their entire season. I think there are some really good things to build on, but perception is everything. You know, hopefully Miami will get a chance to go to a bowl game and participate in a bowl game if they feel comfortable with that, and that won't be the last thing that we see, right? We'll get to see one more data point before ultimately making a an overall discussion or just thinking about them for the rest of the season. I do think that might be one of the best things that could have happened to get De'Aaron King back. You know, you take a loss like that, your last loss at home, a guy like that saying, hey, I don't want to go out that way. I want to come back one more season and finish off the right way. That'll be really interesting to follow as we go through this entire process.
Eric, I want to go back to your career a second. You know, when Clemson got boat raced in that same stadium by West Virginia, gave up 70. I don't mean to put salt in the wound here.
Whoa.
But in some respects, when you look back at it from Clemson's history in this run of this decade, it might have been the best thing that ever happened because it turned out to be the ultimate catalyst for change and chip on shoulder that won't happen again. And I just wonder, you know, sometimes people take that stuff. Sometimes you go one way, sometimes you go another. You know, maybe getting embarrassed right like that could be, in some respects, the best thing that happened to Manny Diaz and his team, because they will sit back and go, you know what? We never want to experience that again on national television where somebody is absolutely mocking us. It made every play look like it could go for 75, and you've lived it. You know, Clemson, it could have been real easy to say, oh man, went to the Orange Bowl, we gave up 70, got humiliated, we're not that good, we'll never be that kind of team. Look what happened. They took it, made changes, the rest is history. So you've lived it. So, I mean, you tell me.
Yeah, well, I didn't think I'd be coming on TV and have to relive those fantastic memories this morning, but you're absolutely right. I mean, that was a time where we're looking up at the scoreboard and just saying, what are we doing? What the heck is going on? And it was a little bit of a combination that day with crazy turnovers, and then it, like you said, it just avalanches on top of you. You look up and another team has 70 points. And, I think you're absolutely right, though. It's a mindset. You know, we went into that offseason saying that this is never going to happen to us again. You know, that was the old team. This is the new team. And Clemson made some changes. And, we changed our mindset. And you look at what happened since then, you know, going on to win BCS championships, winning two national championships, you know, winning the ACC five times in a row. So I think you're absolutely right. Miami can either take this moment and obviously use it for good and use it as motivation to take the next steps that they need as a program to, you know, get back, as everyone likes to say, every other year. Or, they can regress from it and let it linger and let it be something that defines them. So, you know, some big times ahead of them, big decisions for a lot of different people on that team, whether to go pro or come back. And it's going to be fun to follow Miami this offseason, no doubt.
All right, let's talk about also changing the narrative in Blacksburg, because I thought Saturday night that's what Virginia Tech did in many respects, with the way they play. But it's a two-sided deal here, Eric, because we were buying Virginia to a point. It had created, as Pac said last week, so much pressure on the Hokies. Did Virginia Tech respond to the pressure, or did they play to their capabilities? And what do we make of Virginia now in probably their last game of the year? We don't know for sure, but more than likely the Cavaliers have indicated they may potentially bypass a postseason chance.
Yeah, Virginia Tech, guys, I think they are the most difficult team to figure out. When you look at this whole season, and at one point, you know, I even had them at number two in my ACC power rankings, and thinking that they are this dominant team that has an amazing offensive line that just runs through people. They have a running back that can do it all, and then a quarterback from Hendon Hooker to Burmeister, whoever they have in there that can really orchestrate that offense. And then they started getting healthier. They started getting COVID free and they got worse. It was the strangest thing to see what happened to Virginia Tech this season, where you have such a great start and then to lose, you know, four or five of your last six or seven. So it's an interesting thing to make from them. I thought they had that potential all year long, but just didn't know if they still wanted to play. Didn't know if they still had it in them to do what they had done early in the year. So it was great to see them finish the way they did. Again, that offensive line just absolutely paved the way for Khalil Herbert. Now, he is a special talent, averaged, you know, 7, 8, 9 yards per carry. That offensive line in total, you know, close to 7 yards per carry against Virginia. And so it just makes you wonder, why couldn't we do this all year? And it's just so head scratching. But to see the way they finished was great. And we talked about staying power and the fact that, was this game kind of a big momentum swing for recruiting in the state, for bragging rights in the state? And I truly think that if Virginia would have won, it would have been something that we saw a huge swing in in-state recruits, you know, start looking at Virginia even more. So now that obviously didn't happen, I think Virginia is going to, you know, find themselves right back where they've been. And then just to answer your question about Virginia and the fact that they have opted out, you know, the coach Mendenhall said that we're not, you know, playing in the postseason. It stinks the way that it finished because they were so hot. You know, 4 games that they finished in outside of the Virginia Tech game, you know, 43-plus points. The offense really clicking, the creativity, the way the defense had finally come together and figured it out, then just to lose the way you did. It was just a little bit uninspiring, the calls that we saw, the formations. I mean, the running backs themselves in that Virginia Tech game for Virginia only had 4 carries. So it was just very strange to see what we did in that offense, the way they called plays, what they tried to do, because it just didn't look like the 4 games that we saw prior.
As a former offensive lineman, though, I don't know, you've been bragging about Virginia Tech's offensive line a lot, not necessarily consistently in November, but in the early part of the season. But they got after them up front on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And like I said earlier today, Mac, you know, if you didn't watch the season, you just turned that game on Saturday night for the first time, you'd have just said, dudes in maroon are a lot bigger and tougher and meaner and nastier than the guys in the white. And they just got after them. I mean, it was simple as that.
Yeah, they really did. I mean, big Brock Hoffman. I mean, I think he's the best center in the ACC. It starts with him. And then just all around him. I mean, big Doug Nestor at right guard, a guy that has really, you know, just taken some huge steps forward. Christian Darisaw at left tackle. I don't know if there's a better tackle in the country. A guy that again, has made so much money for himself this year. I can't wait to see where he ends up in the draft because I truly think he's going to be OT number one when it comes draft time. But those guys just do what they do, and they love to get out in space. Similar to Louisville, Virginia Tech loves kind of doing this outside zone, this stretch play where they just get out and run. And that's got to be a fun system to play in when you can just get all that momentum going in one direction and have such a special running back as Khalil Herbert, who is so patient, guys. He doesn't just run left as fast as he can and know that he can just outrun everybody or think that he can outrun everybody. He's patient. He lets the holes develop, and then he picks and chooses where to go. And I think that's what we saw them finally get back to against Virginia. And back, like you said, they were just mashing guys all over the field.
Good points. More coming up with Eric McClain, including championship week accounting.
Come on.
What are you laughing about? What are you laughing about?
We're almost done. I'm just so happy I don't have this pressure anymore.
Oh, please. This week, though, I will tell you, this week it's harder this week. It's tougher this week.
It got more confusing. Yeah. You know, people didn't take care of business like we thought, and some serious movement from my end.
Yeah, I agree.
Had to do some polishing.
That's
you weren't
right.
Renovating.
That's
you were
right.
Polishing, right?
Just polishing.
Just slap a coat of paint on there,
right.
Touch it up. That's it.
No doubt.
All right,
no
coming
doubt.
Up more with EMAC. We'll get into that, plus early thoughts on the Tigers and the Irish Saturday afternoon in Uptown Charlotte at Mark Packer Field at Bank of America Stadium. All that and more coming up next on ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, EMAC joins us every Monday at 8 sharp. That also means it's time for the first installment of accounting. And I do believe it is harder this week to come up with your top 15 or 16 in some. You'll get my 16th tomorrow. But you can partake, hashtag Packer and Durham. And if you submit and we like where you're going, you'll get your fame and fortune on Wednesday's program. But Eric, it's all yours, my man. What do you got?
Come on, let's go. Let's go, man. Like you said, a little bit difficult this week. I had to move some people around that some folks might be a little bit upset about. Obviously, the top two stays the same. But North Carolina, they come back and, you know, take over that number three spot. I had them there for a lot this season. And obviously, the losses that they faced, they got to where they are. I think Wake Forest might be the most interesting piece about this. And I know we haven't touched on them much, but a team that, you know, I thought would really take advantage of not having to play and have practice. But the way it looked, I mean, I'm not sure how much practice these guys were able to get in. They looked very rusty against Louisville. And of course, Louisville comes out and has the best, you know, best game of their season. And you say, well, Wake just beat them. You know, Louisville, I just don't think they could jump that high. And Wake Forest was obviously, you know, three spots ahead of where they are now. So this is how it might end up. You know, I'm not sure if we're going to finish and have that Wake Forest versus Florida State game or not. You know, we haven't heard anything, so assume that game is on. And, you know, Wake Forest can either jump up one or two more spots or, you know, keep free falling.
I think one through five, the ACC is in three tiers. I mean, let's be honest, the ACC is in three tiers. So one through five, you know who they are. 6 through 10, you know who they are, but in whatever order. It's kind of that's like the football version of the glob. And 11,
that's right.
And 11 through 15 have really been locked and loaded for about 2 months. But 6 through 10, 11 through 15, in what order you put them, I think is the challenge. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 are easy. Easy. Easy, easy. But 6 through 10, 11 through 15 are you know who the five are in both groups. Now mix and match and do the best way, however you justify. I think it's where we are.
It's just flavor of the week.
Yeah.
Flavor of the week.
It really is. It really is.
Well, I mean, okay, let me counter with this. To me, the two most difficult teams are Boston College and Wake Forest. Mm-hmm. Eric, how's that? Boston College and Wake Forest to kind of go week to week. Because they did not play. You're looking at just kind of who they've played, how they fit, and yet they end up being the two that are in some ways the most volatile of that middle group. Would you agree?
Now, I completely agree with Wake. And just the fact that we, you know, haven't seen a full season from them and time off, time back on, you know, I think they are truly one of the harder teams just to get a full grasp on it. And it's not their fault. It's not like Virginia Tech, where sometimes they show up, sometimes they don't. I think it was simply because they are such a developmental program, a program that really needs a full spring, a full summer to get their guys up. What they lost, I mean, we had such little expectations from Wake Forest coming in, just strictly because guys moving on. Your best player, Sage Surratt, opting out. And so offensively, we had no clue what or who they were going to be. And they actually, you know, step up and average nearly 40 points a game. And wide receivers step up huge. And they're all very young. So I think you have to be encouraged by Wake Forest. You have to be excited about what they are going to be in the years to come, because it's a lot of young guys on that offense that made huge plays statistically and just momentum swings throughout the entire season.
All right, Pack. I agree with you, though. I think what we are is we're resigned to the football glob this year being kind of that BC Pitt, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest group. That's the football glob.
Yep.
That's where we're going to stop with it.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's a whole lot that can be gleaned from the Deacons and Seminoles on Saturday to change that. The bottom is the bottom, and we know who the bottom is, and they know who the bottom is, and they know why they're at the bottom. But that glob is just kind of where it is, right?
Yeah, 6 through 10, I think that's the biggest change. If you're at home trying to do this, and they've been following along all season. I think 6 through 10 this week after what Virginia Tech did. Who, yep. I still think Virginia Tech's the biggest mystery team in the league. When they're good, they're good. Yes, when they're bad, they're bad. But 6 through 10 to me is the real challenge in trying to put up with your list. That's the toughest one.
Yeah. There you go. All right, Eric, we got to move on to something here before we let you go, because it is championship week, as you know, in the Atlantic Coast Conference.
That's right.
The ACC title tilt, Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock, Mark Packer Field at Bank of America Stadium there in Uptown Charlotte.
I don't bank with Bank of America, so my name's not on that. Sorry.
I don't bank with them. Just checking. All right, then we'll scratch Mark Packer Field.
No,
all right.
Don't put my name
Dabo on. Sweeney yesterday. Dabo Sweeney, Eric. On a Zoom call with a virtual background, was asked about the comments of Southeastern Conference Commissioner Greg Sankey. Ladies and gentlemen, the head coach of the Tigers.
If the ACC was trying to really protect Clemson and Notre Dame, why would we even play the game this week? I mean, if 6 wins can get you in the playoffs, shouldn't 9 get you there? Shouldn't 10 get you there? And that's not what we're about. We want to crown a worthy champion. It's going to be an awesome game. You know, it's going to be awesome. I would have loved to have played this past weekend. I had no problem with that. I didn't make that decision. I had no problem. We wanted to play when we were down in Tallahassee. We're about to get on a bus and go play. So things happen just like it has all over the place. We've played 10 games. Notre Dame's played 10 games. We're excited to go play a championship, crown a worthy champion of this league and go from there. So I think if the league was trying to, you know, protect that, you wouldn't even play the game, to be honest with you. But that's not what Notre Dame wants. That's not what we want. We want to go play the game.
Brings up a good point.
Let me just say, I really like Dabo with glasses, because when Dabo has the glasses on, Dabo's got things to say.
Stern talking to
Dabo's got things that's to right. say. Yep.
Hey, I always knew when I was walking into his office, if he had those glasses on, I was like, oh man, here we go. It's either going to be a stern talking to or a serious conversation. But he's right.
Right.
I mean, you look at it. What if the ACC just said, you know what? You know, we're not going to play this game. Notre Dame's the champ. And we're going to automatically get 2 teams in the playoff. I mean, people would lose their minds. I mean, if you look at it from a business decision, you look at it from protecting your teams, that would be it. That would be the decision to make if that was the true case. And it absolutely isn't. It's just not wanting to put one team at a disadvantage. And that was a smart thing to do. And you know, I think when you look at it, the criticism and they play 10 games. That's as many as any other conference in America is playing. 10. That's the maximum number. They'll play 11 in the ACC championship, just like the Southeastern Conference. So I'm not sure what the big issue was or why it was a big deal. I certainly don't think it is. There's no question that Notre Dame and Clemson are two of the best teams in the country. There's no question that given the outcome of that game, both of those teams potentially deserve to be in the college football playoff to defend and discuss even further that they are two of the best teams in the country. So, you know, I have no quarrel with it. I think it's going to be a fantastic game December 19th and really the most anticipated, the most exciting, overhyped or hyped up ACC championship that we have ever had. There's no question of that.
By the way, you know, Clemson could have played South Carolina this weekend. They both were open, but, you know, one league wanted to play, one league didn't. Just saying.
We seem to forget that little tidbit.
Again, don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. I've been harping on that
That's
now
right.
for about the last 45 minutes.
<That's right>.
What about the game, though, Eric?
All right, Eric, what about the game?
You know, it's so funny. We've seen so many different people whether on Twitter or professionally, people talking about how Trevor Lawrence is going to be the biggest difference in this game. And I think that's true, but you have to provide why. If it's throwing the ball, then that's not very true. You know, you have a true freshman in DJ Uiagalelei that sets the all-time passing record. So how could you do much better than that? I think the key when you're discussing Trevor Lawrence being back is, number one, his leadership, his experience. You know, the fact that he's going out there, he's seen a lot of different things. He's done a lot of different things that, you know, DJ just wasn't privy to just because of how young he is. So that's a big key of it. And then the other is the fact that he is such an athlete. He's such a difference maker, a threat in the run game. The zone read is going to be the biggest part of Trevor Lawrence being back in this game because Notre Dame is going to have to respect it. They're not just going to be able to dial in and focus 100% on stopping Travis Etienne, because if that happens, the same exact thing that happened to Ohio State in the playoff last year is going to happen to Notre Dame. Trevor's just going to keep it. He's going to be running wide open downfield, 60 yards for a touchdown, because you have to be able, you know, to defend both. And I think, honestly, that's going to free up Travis to have a much better day. As everyone remembers back in November when they played for the first time, Notre Dame held Travis Etienne to 1 yard per rush. I mean, they did such a fantastic job in that first game. I just think with Trevor's running ability and the threat of him running, that's not going to be the case this time. You also look on the defensive side of the ball, okay? Notre Dame has a center, you know, who is hurt, who is not going to be playing in this game. So that's an instant, you know, kind of power shift now that Clemson is going to have big defensive tackle and All-American candidate a year ago in Tyler Davis back. So that matchup at the line of scrimmage is going to be a huge indicator. And then you add in Clemson's obvious two defenders behind him and James Skalski, you know, one of the best linebackers in the ACC, and Mike Jones, a guy who can run around and is such an active linebacker, a guy that's fantastic in coverage, but also when Ian Book, you know, is scrambling around trying to escape, you now have a guy who can match his speed. So it's going to be a great matchup. I can't wait to see both of these teams fully healthy going at it in Charlotte on the 19th. It's going to be such a good game.
All right. Look forward to EMAC back next Monday. By the way, when you return next Monday to this program, we'd like to see that Christmas tree over your right shoulder. Just been sent a note from some NC State fans that want you to realize they had a better season than the ornament on that tree indicates. The ornament on that tree for NC State's toward the bottom. They'd like to see it move up a little bit more toward the top where it rightly deserves after some of their performances.
We can do that. We can change them around. I'll put it in order that everybody finishes in. I'll take care of that.
Thank you very much. Eric McClain joining us. Take care. Have a great week, big fella. You bet. Wednesday's National Signing Day. We got you covered here on ACC Network. Special Signing Day edition of The Huddle. Wednesday at 5 o'clock, EMAC with EJ Manuel, Coach Rick, and Jordan Cornett. Take you through each school with highlights and evaluations. They'll have guests as well. Nobody covers the ACC like we do right here on ACC Network. We have come back to the Department of Quality again on WRU nominees. Pack, the list is long and it is distinguished. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I would.
Sit tight. Here we go. WRU is next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. My thanks to Eric McClain. Coming up in about 25 minutes, Andrea Adelson will join us. A lot of things to get into with Andrea. Before we do all that, though, it's time for a little wide receiver U, and it is a long list and could have been even longer. So with that said, Mr. Durham, you lead.
Did we lead some people off the list, Pack?
Yes. There were about three or four that could have made the cut, and people might scream, but cutting it to four will be a challenge. Again, folks, vote on this. It's not our call. We do not determine the winner. You do, the viewer, the listener.
We have, by the way, we have reached the maximum number of nominees. We can only have 12, folks. That's all the systems can handle here at the Packer and Durham program and the Department of Research. So here we go. We're going to start in Tallahassee, and we're going to start with the Duke Blue Devils because, you know, we've seen Duke from time to time, but I'm not sure Duke's ever had a major threat to wide receiver U. They do this week. Eli Pankow.
Nice grab here.
It's a pretty good catch now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was the start of the rally for Duke after giving up 28 to Florida State just to get things started. We're just going to spot you guys 28, and now we're going to go play before we start turning it over all day. Nice grab, though.
Start the rally. Is that what you just said?
It's what it was. We're going to spot you 28. Now we're going to go play. That's what happened Saturday in Tallahassee.
All right. Let's go to the Noles side of the card in the ballgame at Doak Campbell. Ontario Wilson of the Seminoles, opening quarter of play.
Look out. Part of the early onslaught.
Cooking one up.
Yeah, early onslaught. This looked like Florida State of old.
Onslaught.
No, I mean, this is how you used to play Florida State. You'd go to Tallahassee thinking you're going to do something. Next thing you know, it's 28 to nothing. They're kicking off for like the fifth or sixth time in the first quarter. And you're like, man, it's going to be a long day. That's how this game got started.
Yep. Good throw, good catch.
Yep.
Nicely done. All right, next, Cardinal Stadium, Louisville, Kentucky. Hello. Couple of Demon Deacons on the list. Taylor Morin has been on here before. Don't know that he's been a winner, but he is definitely a nominee for this catch right here. Roddy Jones called this during the game, by the way, Pack. Roddy was selling WRUs on Saturday during the show.
I listened to it. I heard it, and I wrote it down on my notes. I said Roddy would be 100% correct because Taylor is going to be on the list. Roddy was all over it.
This looks like a finalist to me, by the way, Mark. Just saying. I mean,
you know what that
come
was?
Come on now.
You know what that was? That's what you used to do to your younger brother, whether you're playing Nerf hoop, football, basketball, whatever. That's what you used to do to your younger brother. Just go snatch it right over his head. It's more right. Where that word came from. Some more of that, you bring it inside.
Let me check with Josh Macri here. That's got a chance, by the way. How do I know it's a finalist? Because it's also got a chance to be on Monday Night Countdown this afternoon on ESPN and earlier tonight in the You Got Mossed segment, by the way. Josh Macri, is that – that's a finalist, right? That's got finalist written on it, don't you think?
To be determined. Figure it out in the break.
Hey, man. He's back. Macri's back. I tell you what, I know you're not allowed to take that face mask off, but if you did, you'd look just like that nutcracker sitting behind my shoulder.
That's a fact, yeah.
All right, here we go. Let's go. Let's stay with Wake Forest. Blake Whitehart, the tight end. Blake Whitehart makes a great catch on a ball from Sam Hartman here. This is a heck of a grab, too.
Ricochet.
It's off a deflection, though. Watch this. It's a ricochet job. Off the leg of Ja'Cory Roberson to Blake Whitehart. Double play ball from Sam Hartman. Bang, bang, caught. There you go. All right. speaking of Ja'Cory Roberson, he's next on the list here. This is in the third quarter of the ball game Saturday. I think Roddy called this one, too, as a WRU. Yep, he sure did. Yep, I think that was the other one that got called. It's pass interference, by the way, against Louisville.
Are you sure? I'm just asking.
That might have been both ways.
Yeah, I'm just asking.
Might have been both ways. Might have been both ways, man. Right?
Look at number three for Louisville. Look at the way he gets thrown to the ground here. You tell me who's – wait a minute. It's on who again?
Momentum. Okay. It's a lot of momentum. Yeah, a lot of momentum.
Like me walking through a pavement at night. Momentum. It's exactly what it looked
Let's
like.
Let's go.
Me busting Let's my you go. Know what. And...
Let's go back to Florida.
Go ahead.
Let's go back to Florida State, Duke. Brendan Gant had a pick for the Noles. This is one of two defensive plays on the list.
There was another pick in this game that could have been added to the list. For Florida State fans that are screaming, Pack, that's not even the best interception we had. Well, I'm just telling you, it was hard to narrow these down. But there's some good ones here. There's some good ones. Pretty good catch, though. Look at this.
Oh, Unbelievable. Yeah, but here's the deal, okay? Is that better than Tony Grimes against Miami for Carolina?
Good one, too.
Because that's the reality. Let's go to the Tony Grimes pick. Tony Grimes' pick is bananas, isn't it? This is crazy, Mark. I mean, seriously. Where does he get it? Right
on the way down.
There?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, Miami fans are going, hey, I really appreciate you holding my arm there. But that's okay. It's a great play. I'm just saying. I don't know how that guy missed it. But it's all right. By the way, Grimes is going to be a dude, isn't he? I mean, that dude should be playing high school football right
Major.
Now. Should be playing high school football.
Right.
And he's out there balling. He is going to be a player.
Thursday night, Grant Field, Atlanta, Georgia. Hello again, football fans. DJ Turner. He's been a winner of this competition.
On the fly.
Wow. Never broke stride.
Perfect. Sweet unis, aren't they?
Goodbye.
Best in the league right there.
Oh, my God, they look so good.
Best in the league.
That was a good matchup in the uniform game the other night.
Sure was.
All right, back to South Florida. Deami Brown, a veteran finalist of wide receiver U. Goodness. In stride. Man, oh, man. I thought he was going to house this whole deal, Pack. 92, I thought he was going.
I did, too. Plus, the way Miami tackled all day, I'm surprised he decided to go get him.
I knew it. Here we go. I knew it.
Wes, I know you were busy doing games, but I'm sitting here at home watching all this going, for crying out loud. I mean,
all right.
Come on.
Let's.
I'm not trying to be funny, but I mean, you know, enough already.
All right, we've had big man touchdowns this year. Aleem McNeil was a winner. We've had defensive guys, Andrew Booth,
couple times,
maybe catch of the year, right?
Yeah. Catches.
Now all of a sudden we have a quarterback in wide receiver. You
had to put this on the list. I had to put it on the list. You deserve it when you put 62 on the board.
Roll videotape.
Yep. Now, that wasn't the play, though.
Nope. That's not the play.
That was another touchdown pass, but that wasn't the one. It was actually the pass to Sam Howell for a touchdown, which was actually a pretty good catch. But we had to put that on the list, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Nevertheless.
It's on the list. All right. Almost back to Florida State. Duke on Saturday. Nate Thompson gets a pick for the Blue Devils. Had a fumble recovery as well. Not bad, over the shoulder.
Yeah. Pretty good one.
Yeah, it is. That's good. That's got a chance. All right, some would say we saved the best for last here, Pack. We'll watch Thompson one more time from the end zone. No, this really shows you. Good job.
We got to have
one-hander.
All
right, one-hander. The last one.
One-hander.
Saturday night, Commonwealth Cup. Throw it to the tight end. He makes plays. James Mitchell of the Hokies. Boom.
Velcro.
This is a nice play now.
Yeah. Velcro. Look at that. Perfect.
That's pretty nice.
All right, I'll be curious to see what the smart people up in Bristol, Connecticut, come up with the top four out of that group. They got a lot to play with. And it's not the Sam Howell pass.
Yep.
It's the Sam Howell catch that should have been on that list. But nevertheless, they'll come up with the four best. Then you, the viewer, the listener, vote. And you determine the winner. It's as simple as that.
Just telling you, Tyler Morin looks like a finalist. That's all I'm going to say. Taylor Moore in a Wake Forest looks like a finalist. I hope the folks up there are listening.
We don't all have right, so, any say so. I mean,
we don't.
We can voice an opinion, but we just lead this thing. We're not the smart people in the room. The smart people in the room will come up with the top
four. I'm with you. That's it. All right, sit tight. We will come back more basketball checkup before we get to Andre Adelson at 9 o'clock. Tar Heels were winners this weekend on the hardwood for Roy Williams on Saturday. Slow start against Coach Lavelle Moton's North Carolina Central Eagles. We'll recap that and more from the weekend in hoops when Packer and Durham continues on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham. Andrew Adelson's coming up here in about 10 minutes. We still have the best of and the worst of the weekend. Yep. Your phone calls if you're in the mood. 844-SAY-ACCN. Still got a lot to cover. A lot of stuff happening over the weekend. I mean, a bunch of stuff, including more basketball.
More basketball talk and reports surfacing. If you're just joining us this morning, that lots of sources. Started with Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports. Adam Rittenberg here from ESPN. Who's been with us before, folks at The Athletic all saying that all indications are that Northwestern University Athletic Director Jim Phillips is being targeted as the next commissioner of the Atlantic Coast Conference. So those are basically the headlines after a weekend busy with football and basketball. And we, as Pac said, we stay with hoops here. Tar Heels pick up a win before they blew out Miami in football. Carolina edged Lavelle Moton and the Eagles of North Carolina Central. And this was a ball game that got put together, by the way, kind of as a result of some COVID problems with other non-conference games. Coach Roy wanted to see if he could squeeze another one in there. And another slow start for Carolina, Pack, much like Iowa the other night in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Tar Heels had a hard time hitting the gas to get their thing going the other day against the Eagles.
That would be true, but it also helps 31-8 from the free throw line, Wes. That also helps when you get off to slow starts if you can attempt a lot more free throws than the other guy in a slow game. But this is going to be something that Roy and the boys are going to have to figure out. I mean, you can't just keep going, hey, all right, we'll get around to it around the second TV timeout. We're good here. Competition's going to pick up, and you know, you take on a team like Iowa the other night, next thing you know, you find yourself down double digits early. They fought back, and that's the thing I loved about the ACC Big Ten Challenge for North Carolina. Hey, you played a really good team on the road. They jumped you early, and you fought back, took the lead, and again, Iowa just pulled away late. So there are signs with North Carolina that I really, really like, but like most teams, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Agree with you on that. Brian Ives has our tweet this morning. North Carolina's been outscored by 13 points in the first 10 minutes of games this season. So we'll see where that characteristic, where it changes for Coach Williams and the Tar Heels as we move forward. Armando Bacot, by the way, another double-double this season, gives him 13 in his career with 19-11 in Saturday's 73-67 victory. Let's go to Coral Gables because Miami fell to Florida Gulf Coast. The boys from Lob City or Dunk City, whichever city it is, that had that march to the Sweet 16 a few years ago with Andy Enfield as their coach. Florida Gulf Coast out of the Atlantic Sun beat the Canes 66-62 despite 20 from Isaiah Wong. But things kind of picked up after the ball game. Miami. Chris Likes missed the game. Earl Timberlake is still out. You know, Sam Wardenburg's out for the year for Miami. So depth has become a problem. And Jim Larrañaga, after the game, became the latest coach to challenge the NCAA just on kind of their basketball administration. There is a report that the transfer rule could be waived this week, Mark, and that would allow guys who have been, for one reason or another, held off the floor because of their waiver, could be automatically eligible to play beginning potentially, possibly this week. And Jim Larrañaga essentially went after the NCAA saying, why would you make a decision like this in the middle of December? If you're going to make changes, why aren't you making them before the season starts? Now, he's got a player, Elijah Olanini, sitting out who would be immediately eligible. So does Pittsburgh. Jeff Capel's team also has a player in that same kind of scenario. Larinaga said, from what I understand, the decision's not going to be announced until like 5 o'clock on Wednesday. He goes, that's a joke. We play at 6. He described the NCAA as ridiculous amid a worsening coronavirus pandemic. I don't disagree with Coach Larinaga's thoughts. And in fact, Pac, I'm kind of glad one of the veteran guys in the ACC, not named Mike Krzyzewski or Roy Williams or Jim Boeheim, stepped up here and told the NCAA in no uncertain terms, hey, you guys are sleeping at the wheel here.
2 points. Number one, Miami has 6 scholarship players available. That's what they had for that game. 6. That's it. 6. Number two, this goes all back to what Mike Krzyzewski's been beating his drum for years upon years upon years, that the NCAA basketball world needs a person in charge. You don't have one of these committees. Everybody gets together. Kumbaya. Great. Cool. You bring the donuts. I got the coffee. Let's get in this corner meeting, get a subcommittee group, and you guys email to those guys down the hallway. Then we'll get together how about next week, and we'll figure out what we should do. This, you know, this is why Kay is right. Kay's been right from the get-go on this thing, that college basketball needs a person in charge that makes these kind of decisions, that's dealing with this 24/7, 365, that you don't get into a middle of a season or 3 weeks into a year and go, oh, boy, that's a real good idea. I should have thought of that. Larinaga's right. Kay's right. All these basketball coaches are right. I mean, what else is there to say? I mean, how many more examples do you need that there is absolutely positively no clue from the NCAA office other than, hey, can we put the tournament together? That they can do, and that we hope they can finish. But as far as the day-to-day operations, it's almost laughable, quite frankly.
Pac, here's the other thing, too, before we get to break, and Andrea joining us in just a few moments. We have yet to hear any of the game management rules and protocols from the NCAA as it relates to number of players.
Right.
I mean, we're going through this really kind of with, you know, blinders on and catch-as-catch-can, and conferences are scrambling, the ACC being one, with a postponement of conference games. We've seen it more on the women's side than the men's side, although we do have a game this week already postponed and another one in the balance as well. But the NCAA has just said, you know what, you got to play 13 games.
Y'all figure it out.
They don't tell you how many guys you got to have. They don't tell you how it's going to work from a standpoint of, you know, what happens? Do you have just 5? What happens if you, I mean, it's, you know, we're getting no leadership out of that organization as it relates to the conducting of the regular season.
None. Amen, brother. 100% right.
All right. We have Andrea Adelson here at the top of the hour. She had the story this weekend about Florida State introducing a brand new candidate into their quarterback mix. And when this guy was rolling before a devastating leg injury, Mackenzie Milton was something. He is recovered. It's a great story. Andrea is going to talk about that, and we'll get her thoughts on the stories this morning involving Northwestern Athletics Director Jim Phillips as the next commissioner of the ACC next.
Packer and Durham.